So blah, 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 phase one of Jesus' ministry. We started his birth and then his baptism and his first miracle and then his declaration of ministry in the temple in the middle of all of his people in his hometown when he declares that he will be a light to the whole world. And even though the reception of this exciting news was not met with enthusiasm, Jesus persisted, moving on to what I guess we could call phase two. In phase two, Jesus goes out to find people willing to join him in this calling of ministry, offering them and in turn us an opportunity to be a part of his incredible, life-changing mission of love. For anyone responding to God's call in their life, there is a time when it all began. Sometimes it is a flash of understanding, a revelation after which you know your life will never be the same. Other times it may be gradual, and you may not necessarily be able to point to any particular day when you finally knew what God was asking you to do. Now, people who follow God often do so with reluctance, or at least hesitancy. The prophet Isaiah's ministry, which he reluctantly accepted, began in the year King Uzziah died. Jeremiah's prophetic mission began in an era that led to exile. The apostle Paul's evangelistic work began in a particular moment when a light from God struck him blind on the road to Damascus. Sue's call was slow in developing. It took her 10 years to finally decide to leave and go to seminary. My call to this church began in a room upstairs in the presence of Steve Getman. It all has a beginning point. And in our own times, your story of calling may begin in the year 9/11 when that happened, or it could be like the year Sue, which is, 9/11 is the year Sue entered seminary, by the way. Or perhaps it was the year after your graduation, or the week you lost a job, the day your child got sick, or perhaps a mentor affirmed your talents, and that was the moment that you knew that that was what God wanted you to do. Point is, Christ's call can come in many ways, and at many times, and it comes again, and again, and again. And the question is always, will we hear it, and how will we respond? See, we all live with patterns. Patterns formed by the routines of our daily lives, formed by the pressures and demands of the world around us. Patterns that are not always intentional. They simply become part of the life we find ourselves living. And some of the patterns may be silly to us if we examine them, and to other people too. For instance, when Sue eats dinner, she desperately wants to end the meal with a taste of something sweet. Salty, then sweet, never in the other order. No matter what she eats in the evening, she wants that last bite or sip to be sweet. So if you stop and think about it, you will think about patterns in your own lives, things that you do just because you do them. And they are silly, and sometimes they are serious, but they form the way we live our lives. They form from the way we react to the duties and responsibilities of everyday living. We don't often consciously examine them. They're just a part of our routine. Rarely do we like to change them. They're like a favorite pair of slippers or jeans or that good old easy chair. They just fit us right. Now, patterns can be helpful. They help us take care of the routine and mundane tasks without a great deal of thought or planning. And patterns can be expedient. But what happens is that routines and patterns grow into comfort zones. They become our own little world. They're not wrong in and of themselves. They're just the way we do things. And I would assume that fishing was just such a pattern for Peter, James, and John. fishing ordered their days and nights and their seasons. They'd grown up around it. Their routine of sailing and casting and bringing in the catch, cleaning the fish, getting them sold, caring for their equipment, were a habitual way of living. It was the way they earned a living, and so it became the way they ordered their lives. The danger of our routine patterns is that they can become prison-like for us. We get so comfortable in our comfort zones that we don't dare venture from them. Now let's admit it. When we're comfortable, it is easy to react negatively to a new thought or challenge. How quickly we can react to the new with the old, "I don't do that," "I can't do that," or worse yet, "I won't do that." Did you know that often in maps just west of Gibraltar in the Mediterranean Sea, maps that predated Christopher Columbus, there were notations such as "nothing beyond here," or perhaps the drawing of a sea monster to show the fear of the unknown. And we may shake our heads and say, because we know the bigger picture now. Now we know that there was so much more beyond the edge of those maps. So much more to be explored and discovered. Have you ever considered that the patterns we live with appear to us as the only possibility for our life in this world? That what we see and believe is the only possibility? Well, truth be told, without Jesus, many of our life maps would end with ourselves. So as Jesus approached the disciples to be on the shore of Galilee that day, he challenged them with a call to break their routine, to see beyond their self-constructed patterned world and to try something new. The routine declared, "We've done what we always do, and our nets are empty. We've already started cleaning up." Well, for Peter, James, and John, their life maps changed the day Jesus showed up and got in their boat. Peter, whose mouth always ran ahead of his brain, responds to this in a way many of us would today, especially if we think God has a job for us. Peter declared himself unworthy, saying, "Go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man." And Jesus called him anyway. Because Jesus doesn't call the best of the best. He doesn't call the equipped. He equips the called to help him change the world through love. God's call to us is rooted in everyday life. And the Spirit's promptings to serve Christ usually happen during our regular routines. So it is easy to miss them. In the midst of the ordinary, our calling emerges, and no person is good enough or strong enough or pure enough. No tongue is clean enough, but we are called anyway. Zenith Television Company used to have a sales slogan that said, "The quality goes in before the name goes on." In the work of the kingdom of God, God calls us and names us before there is any evidence of our quality. God calls us to our unique, God-given purpose, and we either act on that or we don't. We are free to say no. What happens in the gospel story 2,000 years ago continues to happen today. And acting in spite of their insecurities, the first thing the disciples do is launch out. They row their boats out, Jesus in one of them. They cast off from the shore, and they begin to leave behind that carefully arranged routine of cleaning their nets. That's their security, the pattern they have shaped all their lives. And that's exactly what Jesus is inviting you and me to do today, is to launch out into deeper waters. Now, it's one thing to launch out. It's easy to launch out. It's difficult to continue to follow. Because the disciples don't stop with launching out. They keep going, following Jesus' next instruction to let down their nets. What a foolish thing. Clearly, Peter and his mates have no expectation of catching anything. They've been there all day. They have already fished this whole area, and they knew there were no fish there. Or so they thought. But they followed Jesus' direction, his way, and found a huge catch. So I asked myself, what would it mean for us to let down our nets into deeper waters? What if we let down our nets even while we were sure it wouldn't do any good? Perhaps it would mean investing ourselves in the exact place where we are most afraid or intimidated. God might be asking us to take bigger risks, to step beyond our comfort zones. It might mean we would need to ask for help more often, or, God forbid, even ask for forgiveness. We might, like the disciples, have to take the next step as well. We may have to leave behind our nets and everything we are familiar with and follow him. I wonder what it is that we here at First Presbyterian Church need to leave behind in order to follow Jesus. What is the safe and familiar thing or pattern that we have to give up to live into the kingdom of God? I hope we will look honestly to determine that. Because I remember that Jesus calls his disciples not because of who they are, but because of who they could be. And he is offering the same call to you and me today. Who could we be? Will we hear? Will we respond?